world, and welcome to Dark Reading Radio. There's a great show coming your way today as part of Dark Reading Radio's continuing series of shows on all topics around information security. Want to let everyone listening know that the audio that you're listening to is not the only part of Dark Reading Radio. If you're listening to this live, then you've seen the online chat taking place alongside this radio show. We would love to have your voice in that online discussion. To take part, all you have to do is type your comment or question in the box labeled your post, then be sure to click on the big red post button at the bottom. Marilyn Cahotas and her guest will be joining that discussion at the bottom of the hour. But to get us started, let me turn things over, Marilyn, to you.
Thanks, Kurt. Thanks for the great introduction. I'm, as Kurt said, Marilyn Cahotas, and I'm going to be moderating our Dark Reading Radio show today on advancing your security career. We have a great panel, and so I'm going to not waste any time in introducing them so we can get started. First off is Kimberly Price. She's the Senior Director of Researcher Operations at BugCrowd, where she pioneered the first security researcher outreach program in the software industry. Prior to that, Kimberly analyzed APTs at Microsoft and spent 4 years investigating product vulnerabilities in BlackBerry's security response team. Next up is Levi Gundert, who was Vice President of Threat Intelligence at Recorded Future. Before joining Recorded Future, Levi was the VP of Cyber Threat Intelligence at Fidelity Investments and technical leader for Cisco's Threat Research Analysis and Communications Track Team. And last but not least, we have Oanante Bestman, who was a technical security recruiter in the Cyber and Information Security Division of Barclays Simpson, which is an international corporate governance recruitment firm. So welcome, everyone, and thank you for joining our panel discussion. I thought to start with, I know I've given all of your bullet points from your resumes, but I think it would be fun for the audience to hear a little bit more about how you first got interested in an information security career and what were kind of the key steps, the people, places, or things that brought you to your current position. So I'm going to call on each one of you and to talk a little bit about how you started your career, how you imagined it would be, and what it really turned out to be. Kimberly, you want to kick it off?
Sure thing. Happy to. So I got started officially in security in 2003 at Microsoft, but I got into security by being a sort of account manager for the security business unit at Microsoft. I was not working in the group. I was working with them in an organizational capacity. And through meeting with different directors and general managers in that group, to better understand their long-term strategies so that I could help them better, ended up identifying a role that was actually a pretty good fit for my skill set, which was my background is in behavioral psychology. So I ended up working with a client team of mine that wanted to build a program involving outreach to security researchers to improve the relationship with that important demographic for Microsoft, because in 2003 it was very hostile. And so essentially I started an evangelism program, but I started it from within the engineering team and not within the marketing team. And that comes down to being, you know, in the right place with the right skills, working with people who could see this strategic potential. And from there, all of my security experience has been on the job learning. So I don't have a computer science degree. I don't have a CISSP. And so my perspective on how to get into and thrive in security, I think, will be a little different than anyone who followed the traditional path of, you know, getting your technology degree and your technology training, graduating, and then going on to an engineering position.
Interesting. So this was not a correct path that you had thought about for years and years or studied for?
No, I actually studied to be an epidemiologist and studied disease patterns and disease trends. My goal had been to work for the Centers for Disease Control when I was in college.
Interesting. Well, we'll get into a little bit more about how what skills apply from one career to the next. But, Levi, why don't you tell your story next?
Sure. I was in New York, and I was studying information systems at NYU when 9/11 happened, and I had always had a keen interest in computers, and 9/11 really radically changed my whole worldview, and I ended up applying to a number of different federal agencies, and Secret Service was one of them, and I was attracted to it because of they're very unique in that they have a dual mission of protection, but also investigations. And in investigations, I was working electronic crimes out of the Los Angeles Electronic Crimes Task Force, where all the local federal state agencies are co-located together. And this was really when cybercrime was taking off. We were seeing some of the first botnets and IRC, and it was really some of the early days of the underground economy. And so it was a very exciting time to be an agent. I had an opportunity to move on to one of the first and premier threat intelligence companies out there, called Team Cymry. And there was a lot of opportunity to do great analysis work with some of their proprietary data sets. And from there, it's really just been additional opportunities, opportunities with Cisco, opportunities with Fidelity Investments and Recorded Future, moving more into leadership roles where I can help define strategy. And, you know, it's to your earlier question about did you expect to end up here? It's, I think, because of how fast our industry moves, it's very difficult to predict where you would actually end up. And if you had asked me when I was in the Secret Service where I was going to end up, I would certainly have no idea.
I think that's probably true of a lot of in tech. When I started out, there was no, you know, internet, and which gives you a little bit of an idea of my age, and the job that I have now didn't even exist. So I think that's kind of a typical pattern for tech, and it's certainly not moving any slower today. Owen Ante, tell us a little bit about your background and what you have seen, the changes that you have seen while you've been recruiting security in the cybersecurity industry.
Of course. I have been in recruitment since graduating. I first started up for about four years I was dealing with IT recruitment, primarily support staff, first to third line, infrastructure, and also developers, a wide range of technical languages. After about 4 years, I moved into the operational risk space and dealt with a lot of insider trading issues. And that naturally progressed into moving to information security. This was at a previous firm, so I decided to join Barclay Simpson, who had been doing information security since 2001, before many individuals would actually define information security. So I've been here with this firm for about 3 years now, 3.5 years. So I've been able to look at the trends behind security. I've seen how it initially started off as a very technical space, primarily dealing with incident management, SIEM tools, investigations, moving on gradually to stakeholder management, compliance within information security across all industry sectors.
Are you seeing with the growth of information security a lot? You're getting in a lot more job. Companies are looking for more people than say 5 years ago. Are you seeing that trend?
Most definitely, and also as well as more jobs, it's easier for hiring managers to get signed off for positions. Years ago, it was a case of hiring managers were frustrated. They would come to me potentially with requirements, but they weren't able to get sign off. Perhaps they had issues in making the board understand the seriousness of security, very similar to what I faced in operational risk. Operational risk primarily took a boom after the credit crunch, but as professionals and hiring managers would tell me, you only get the job done right when nothing goes wrong. and that's also been quite frustrating. But there has been a strong shift in the last few years with the many high-profile breaches we're seeing, so much so that I think that famous phrase has been coined, there are only two types of CISOs, ones that know they've been hacked and ones that don't know they've been hacked. So it's common knowledge now. So it's a lot easier to get signed up for a position. So the amount of roles that have been released to us is shot through the roof, for want of a better term.
That makes sense. What would you say, and I'll go with you first, Owenante, are the most exciting new developments today in terms of the information security landscape? What are the hottest jobs, the technologies, the skills in the markets that you're hearing from? And then we can go around the panel.
Of course. First thing I'll say is that there are trends, but these trends follow technology. Some trends are more effective and longer lasting than others. Currently, I'm seeing a lot of emphasis within the cloud space, quite an exciting area in terms of perhaps security architects with the technical abilities to liaise with some of the IT architects and infrastructure architects, but also to liaise with the business as well and tell them where they're going and even to basic things such as explaining cloud. Another area is the Internet of Things space, which both areas, when it comes to cloud, it's almost indiscriminate of industry, whereas IoT, it's very heavy prevalent in the commerce industry, manufacturing industry, and so forth. But these two main growth areas, along with big data as well, but I've seen a considerable uplift in these two areas, and I would describe these two as the latest trends, if you will. But although I do feel like it's a lot more long lasting than a trend, almost like a way of life with Internet of Things and primarily with cloud technologies as well.
Are there are specific industries that are following those more that are looking more for the skills than others? In terms of when you're talking about cloud and Internet of Things?
Yeah, when it comes to information security, and maybe not everyone will agree with me here, but I always tend to find that financial services and banks do tend to be the trendsetters and pave the way forward. I found that most of my early requirements when it came to cloud migration were within financial services. You have to remember that they are incentivized they're incentivized to try and prevent any breaches. They are likely to face regulatory fines and aspects to that. So they're highly motivated to ensure that technology serves their best purpose and to ensure that the security behind that is effective. Slightly different with the Internet of Things space. It's almost a commercial decision in which firms, for example, manufacturing firms, want to release the latest technology, the latest equipment that consumers will buy and that is effectively secure. So the financial services are often motivated from a regulatory perspective, and I saw them as some of the forerunners within cloud movement, as well as outsourcing companies, mind you, and whereas Internet of Things, it's heavily prevalent within manufacturing firms and also commerce firms.
Levi, what are you seeing in terms of the hottest new jobs and the technologies in your areas?
Well, I think there's sort of a dearth of leadership in general in the security industry, and obviously there's many different niches. Obviously on the defensive side, you have multiple niches like security architecture and incident response and the security operations center and threat intelligence and vulnerability management. And on the offensive side, you have the pen testing teams and the red teams, and there's a lot of really good technical talent out there. But when it comes to the leadership and creating the vision and the culture and keeping and retaining people on these teams who are very talented and technical, I think there's a little bit of a dearth there. And part of that is because, you know, there's somewhat of a skills gap. We call these, you know, quote unquote soft skills, but I think they're actually hard skills, because when you take folks who are very technically oriented, it's very difficult sometimes to then bring additional skill sets, interpersonal communication, presenting skills, writing skills. These are really, really important to succeed in the business beyond just operational security. And so, you know, I think there's really a market need right now for leaders who sort of bridge the gap, that can go deep technically, but also have these quote unquote soft skills. I think there's certainly buy-in that detection is important. And on the defensive side, it's obviously this cat and mouse game that never seems to end. But I think, you know, defense and offense are both hot markets. When it comes to, you know, the offensive side of things, Kimberly can probably speak to this better than I can, but I know at Fidelity, I worked with very talented people on the offensive side, and I think curiosity and creativity are really two of the fundamental attributes that play into solving those problems on the offensive side. You know, testing security controls, understanding if they really work as intended. So there's a lot of opportunity right now on both sides, but I think it's really bridging that leadership gap where there's significant need right now.
Kimberly, you want to weigh in?
Well, I agree with Levi that there is a dearth of talent at the leadership level. I'm going to segment things a little bit further, though, and separate application security from network security, because he also mentioned incident response. And if there is a shortage of talent in incident response for network intrusions, doing forensic analysis of breaches, there is an even greater dearth of talent for application incident response, for folks that are handling vulnerability reports to software vendors and understand how to triage effectively, manage an investigation, interact with a development team, and get fixes released, both from a defensive perspective as well as from the offensive engineering perspective. An incident response team also needs to have their own in-house hackers to be able to reproduce vulnerabilities, maybe take those reported vulnerabilities one step further, find related bugs, be able to test the patches that the development teams have put together to make sure that they can't be easily broken. And so, you know, when you get into the even smaller pool of talent in application security, incident response is a big need. Penetration testing is a huge need. And because the talent pool is so small, we're seeing the industry have to adapt to allow more remote workers. You know, you need someone talented, but if they don't want to move across the country to where you are, you might have to make some compromises and allow remote work. Which, you know, is also part of what I do today in terms of bug bounties. You know, there aren't enough full-time pen testers available for all the companies that need them. So they're essentially time-sharing penetration testers from around the world, some of whom are incredibly experienced and some of whom are just getting started out and are developing and honing their skills. So I think that, you know, studies from 2014 indicated there were 500,000 security positions unfilled, at least 30,000 in the U.S. alone. And so as a response to this, you know, every single conference, every company is recruiting, and everybody has openings. So it's definitely a job seeker's market in that sense, where you can frequently shop around your next career opportunity and decide what you want to do once you've built the skills to attain that.
That was my next question. How does someone build the skills to get a job as in a bug bounty program or an organization like Bug Crowd? If you're just starting out and you think you're interested in, what would be your first steps? And then how would you advance in that field?
I find that, you know, for example, there's a lot of online forums and chat groups where experienced researchers are willing to share expertise and knowledge, recommendations in terms of, you know, books to read, training courses to take, you know, hands-on, playing around with Burp Suite, playing around with, you know, whether it's a web application or going back to your computer science background and doing a little reverse engineering of a C application to figure out how it works and find those vulnerabilities. And so at the end of the day, I find that, you know, I don't generally recommend that someone who wants to get into security just pick up a book and study for a certification test. I encourage them to pick up a book that has tutorials, engage with other researchers, attend conferences and network and develop that sort of community of researchers to share ideas with. And a lot of the folks who get started, you know, the first few submissions they make to a bug bounty may not be great, but it gives them the feedback on here's what a company is looking for, or here's what matters in a vulnerability. And if they are dedicated and committed and continue working on it, we've seen people ramp up relatively quickly. The challenge, I think, with getting started in a bug bounty is that, you know, people tend to specialize in a certain area. So you may become really, really good at finding SQL injections, but you don't have the breadth that you will typically have from somebody who has gone through formal training programs. So while it is a way to get started and a leg up, there is still additional work to be done to sort of round yourself out and gain more skills and not just sort of sit back on your laurels and be like, okay, well, I'm making pretty good money with this one thing I do, but to continue to push yourself to learn in other areas so that you can get those opportunities. We see a lot of bug bounty customers hire the researchers that are submitting to their program. If a researcher has been submitting things over a period of time and is submitting really good vulnerabilities, I can think of at least 5 or 6 different customers that I know have hired people who have worked on their bug bounty. And so it is certainly a way in the door, particularly for people who are overseas and don't necessarily have the ability to attend Black Hat in the summer and walk around the expo hall and get all the recruiter pitches. And as Levi mentioned, some of these very technical people aren't as good at the soft skills, so they wouldn't necessarily be comfortable walking around the expo hall and getting the recruiting pitches anyway. So it gives them that sort of technical person to technical person introduction based on the merits of their work, and then it's a lot easier for them to have that soft conversation around career opportunities, job growth, and things like that.
Is there a learning curve by the time you first say, I want to be a vulnerability research to becoming a successful researcher? How long does it take?
Yes. Depends on how hard you work on it. I have seen people in the span of, you know, 1 year get really good, and within 2 years having job opportunities presented to them. And that sounds like a really long time, but I'm talking about someone who maybe lives in the Philippines and has a computer science degree, and it's a very different economy. In the U.S., that could certainly go faster. Because there's different opportunities, different career opportunities here. I know I keep coming back to the word opportunity, but I think back to 2003 when I started in security, and security researchers were doing their work for advisory credit. There were no bounties. There were very few jobs in the security industry outside of some boutique consulting firms like At Stake or things like that. And the opportunities then were so different than they are today. And so that has shifted the industry drastically.
Interesting. I'm going to go back to you, Levi, because you've had a kind of a varied career in different companies, Cisco, Fidelity, now Recorded Futures, different markets and sizes. What are the pluses and minuses of working for a smaller company, a Cisco or a financial services firm? Are there any personalities that fit better with one or another? What's been your experience?
Well, I think you really have to understand, you know, the differences and understand where you want to work and where you want to specialize, to Kimberly's point. you know, if you want to be an application security professional, generally speaking, the firms and the companies that are going to hire you are most interested in your body of work. They're interested in what you can do and what you know coming in and what you can show. And I think, you know, in startups, that tends to be the case. You know, Recorded Future doesn't care that I have a CISSP. Recorded Future, you know, is much more interested in the work that I can produce. And it's not to say that large corporations don't care so much about the work being produced, but when you're interested in working for a large enterprise, there's a lot of checkboxes that have to be ticked. And some of those come from HR. Some of those are just corporate culture, but they want to see that you have the certifications, that you've, you know, taken the time to essentially check those boxes. They expect a certain professional appearance. They expect that generally speaking, you know, your working hours are going to be somewhat consistent, and you may have to work in an office. That's very different than a startup. You know, Team Cymru and Recorded Future, I work remotely. I was also fortunate to work remotely at Cisco, but there tends to be more flexibility with the startups, just because, again, they don't have that entrenched institutional corporate culture. And it's not all bad or good. It's really just deciding between major differences in what you want to do in your career and where that's going to play out. So, you know, when you show up for a meeting at a Fidelity, generally speaking, you're in a suit. You know, when you show up for a meeting at the Secret Service, you're in a suit. When, you know, you show up at a meeting in a startup, you might be in a polo and jeans, and nobody may care that you're sporting green hair, right? But that won't fly in very corporate cultures. So I think when you start looking and studying at the various niches within security, there's so many now, to Kimberly's point. I mean, application security alone, just mobile application, you know, is its whole specialty in and of itself. And that's very different from, you know, a lot of the traditional teams that corporations have to have in place just to tackle the governance, regulatory, compliance issues, that are mandated within their industry, vertical, whatever that may be. So I think it's really important to understand what you want to do. Are you interested in packets? Do you really enjoy taking NetFlow or packet captures apart? Do you enjoy reverse engineering malware? Do you enjoy identifying threats? Do you enjoy putting security controls in place on the security architecture side? Do you enjoy watching logs in real time, you know, in a SOC environment? And there's obviously stepping stones here. So the goal is to really get your foot in the door at a company, you know, that is a good match for you on culture and a good match for you on the type of work that you want to pursue. And once you have that foothold, obviously you'll accelerate the learning cycle as you go. But it's nice because, you know, to Kimberly's point, there's a lot of things that you can do on your own, and there's so many good open source tools that are out there. So for people that want to get into security that may be a little bit intimidated about it, you know, one of the things I recommend is just starting a blog and talk about some of the research you're doing, talk about some of the books you're reading, talk about some of the applications that are there, and really expose publicly your interest in this particular area or knowledge domain, because I think that goes a long way in sort of demonstrating, you know, what it is that you're actually interested in.
We're almost at the bottom of the hour, but I wanted to just ask you all about a study that we reported on earlier this week by Cloud Passage of the top 121 U.S. university computer science and engineering programs that found that none of the top 10 require students to take a cybersecurity class for their degree in computer science, and three of the top 10 don't offer any cybersecurity courses at all. And I just would like to hear your reaction to that. Do you want to start, Awanante?
Well, they might have a hard time moving forward in the career with that. That is surprising. Academics are important, especially in a technical realm such as IT security. But playing devil's advocate here. I think getting your foot in the door and getting practical experience, practical working experience is I wouldn't say it's equally as important, because you do really need to know what you're doing, ideally within a controlled environment. It is very surprising, though. Very surprising for me to hear that. Yeah.
I find it quite shocking.
Kim?
So I think that if someone is inclined towards security naturally, they've already been hacking on things at home in their free time during college, most likely anyway. The problem I have with the fact that these universities are not even having one course to discuss the importance of security is that not everyone in their program is going to be a security expert, but everyone who writes code needs to have some security background. I just yesterday spoke at a developer conference and asked my audience, you know, who here is familiar with a CVSS score? Who here is familiar with, does your company have an SDL process, a security development lifecycle process? Do you know if you have an incident response team? And it was crickets. There were under 10 people who could answer any of those questions. And it kind of, as a security person, it broke my heart, because even having a fundamental understanding of basics of writing secure code, of the differences between offense and defense, and having a healthy respect for why those two pieces are so important, would make such a difference for our industry, whether you're a security person or you're the security person having to work with a development team. So I think it's incredibly unfortunate.
And the last word to you, Levi.
Yeah, there have been multiple studies that are essentially identifying a million-plus gap in cybersecurity professionals, I think, over the next 5 years. And that's a huge number. And obviously addressing that begins in education. And there are some really good programs out there. But those programs have to be invested in continuing to update curriculum, continuing to update everything that goes into that program, because this industry is nascent, because things are moving so quickly, the development of information security as a discipline and a profession, you can't just throw a curriculum out there and say, okay, we're checking the box and we now have this information security program. It really has to be a long-term commitment to making sure that students coming through the program are really truly equipped and properly prepared to tackle some of the challenges in the real world.
And it seems that the higher education industry isn't doing much to help prepare people to fill the big gap that you in the industry have to find the talented and qualified people to work in your companies. Anyway, at this point, we're at the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to have everyone switch over to the live chat, and there are some questions here from the audience, and we can continue our conversation there. But before we leave, I just want to thank our panelists, Kim and Levi and Owen Ante, for a great discussion, and look forward to seeing you on the other side on the live online chat. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Bye-bye.